There's a story about a little boy who liked to wonder about the fastest thing in the universe. Horses, trains, lightning. But all of it eventually lost the race to one idea. That boy grew up, did the math, and helped convince the whole world that nothing could ever outrun it. Light was the ultimate speed limit, full stop. So when a strange new idea came along, one suggesting that a change in one object could instantly affect another no matter how far away, well, that didn't just raise eyebrows. It rattled the very foundations of physics. And that same little boy, now known to the world as Albert Einstein, couldn't make peace with it. He called this newly discovered phenomenon spooky action at a distance. And though considered one of the world's greatest thinkers, even he wasn't sure what to do with a universe that strange. Hey there, and welcome to Sentinel Watch, where we look at life through a spiritual lens. I'm David Brown. Though much of the world thinks of science as experiments done with matter, the things we can see, smell, hear, taste, and touch, the word science has a much broader meaning. Of course, you think of the science of math, for instance, maybe the science of law. Science as a body of knowledge. There's no such thing as fake knowledge. That's an oxymoron. Knowledge implies truth. When Mary Baker Eddy wrote her landmark textbook, Science and Health, with Key to the Scriptures, she was on her own search for truth. But she wasn't looking to fickle material theories for evidence. She looked deeply into the words and works of Christ Jesus, hence what she called Christian science. When we think about what's true, what are we looking at? Well, in ways big and small, this is something our guest considers every day in his work as European correspondent based in Berlin for the Christian Science Monitor. Mark Sappenfield, welcome back to Sentinel Watch.
Thank you. It's always fun to be here.
I hear you've been thinking a lot recently about some of the material theories so many of us feel that we're bound by every day, like, you know, time and the laws of physics. Was there something that got you thinking along these lines recently?
Well, first I have to say that was the greatest introduction. You know, 80%, 90% of people on Earth believe there is this thing called spirituality. I mean, you just look at polls and they say that. But many people just kind of assume that spirituality is this kind of magical, miraculous kind of thing that's not understandable, that's full of mystery. And what I find so interesting is that when you think about Christian science, kind of what I take from that is about applying the logic and the rigor of what we consider science to spirituality, to Christianity. Because if it's a thing, if it's actually true, if our gut is telling us that there is this thing called spirit that exists, that has to have laws, because that's just common sense. That's the way we see everything working. And to me, there's a joy, there's a wonder, there's an amazing things that happen when we do that. And so that has just been my connection to religion, and it's a fascinating journey. And one, I think as humans, we've only really just started. So there's plenty of room for growth.
Yeah. And I totally agree with you, Mark, that one of the things that I have found so deeply rewarding about Christian science is it encourages you, you know, through the writings of Mary Baker Eddy, and of course, how she delved into the teachings and the lessons of the Bible, how it encourages you to go way below the surface of what appearances are. But I'm going to stop right there, because I have struggled, and I think perhaps some listeners too have struggled, when they have faced situations like, for instance, sickness, and felt like, well, for all of this theorizing, I suppose, or all of this deeper digging, what do I do with that? And I've sometimes found myself in a situation where I'm trying to scientifically reason my way, in a sense, out of not feeling well. And there's something that's important that Mary Baker Eddy teaches in Science and Health that goes to this issue of sort of over-philosophizing, maybe philosophizing at all, or overthinking this, that you don't have to lean into human thinking to see healing. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about perhaps a healing you've had that illustrates how healing takes place in Christian Science as you understand it.
Well, what sticks in my mind right now is I went to Greenland on a reporting trip for the Monitor, which was amazing and fantastic. But in Greenland, at that moment, there was a lot of ice. And I noticed that when you go into restaurants or malls there, they have a little sign there. There's those things that you wear on your feet that are like little stubs, little things are called crampons. And they're basically so that you don't slip on the ice. And mm-hmm. on all these places, they say, no crampons inside the restaurant. You know, I was like, oh, ha, ha, that's funny. You know, here I'm in Greenland, and that's a slice of Greenland. Well, I realized why you really should wear the crampons when you're walking around in Greenland, because I did take quite a tumble, and I happened to land on my camera, which I had. And I took a picture of my camera with my phone, and the lens was just totally destroyed. It was smashed to bits, and it was smashed to bits because it smashed itself into my ribs.
Ah.
And that was not pleasant. It was probably the most pain I can remember feeling in my life. I didn't have it diagnosed, but I assumed that they were very badly bruised ribs. I could not sleep laying down. I could barely bend over in one direction. It was intense pain. And as I was working through that, I noticed that there are moments when you're working through this that, yes, I mean, ultimately, you don't want to just sit there and speak at it. You don't just want to try and reason your way out of it. But you do want to get to a point where you can let go and let another picture displace this claim of bruised ribs in my case. And I would say it wasn't a straight line. I can't say there was, you know, after a week, there was a moment and boom, it was just all gone sort of thing. But there were ebbs and flows to it. And those ebbs and flows, I found, corresponded fairly directly to the moments at which I was able to let go and accept something else than the material picture. And I felt like there was good progress all the way along the way that allowed me to, I never had to stop doing my work. I went to the Olympics a week after that and lugged my suitcases around upstairs and all sorts of things. But I found that whenever that surrender took place, there was progress. And I guess more to the point, there was no pain. And as I was able to live in that space more and more, that's when I was able to do what I needed to do without any impediment from this claim that I had fallen down and landed on my camera and broken it and had these bruised ribs.
That's beautiful. And what about the ribs? How you feeling?
I'm fine now. Yes. No, I was working on it all along and they're fine now and I don't have a problem with them. And what was interesting at that moment is that my trip there was full of a lot of challenges. The Greenlandic people have essentially been overrun by journalists for more than a year because there's been a lot in the news about Greenland. And Greenland only has 60,000 people, and the capital, right, called Nuuk, only has 20,000. So that's a tiny little town. But yet there have been tons of journalists there for a year, more than a year, and they are just exhausted with us. And by the end of the time, I was exhausted with us too. But they kind of, the first time in my career, I called someone and they said, I have decided not to talk to journalists anymore. And she wasn't being mean. She was just like, I have other things to do. I have a job. I have other things to do with my life. Right. I've talked to enough of you now. I'm moving on. But it meant for me, hard. I was trying to tell the story with people who were very understandably not wanting to talk with me. So I was going through all these challenges, but again and again, in different ways, I just saw a grace in how they were solved as I prayed. They might not have been solved in the way I might have foreseen or even I had wanted them to be solved, but they all were solved and in lovely ways. And then in my last day there, this thing happened and it was just so dissonant. It was just like, where did this come from? You know, all of these things about this trip have been this wonderful working out in ways that I could not have foreseen or expected or planned. And then this happens. And so I think a part of the healing that I had was in recognizing that this was just another claim that needed to be overcome, or I guess having that trust. Mm-hmm. All these things had been answered. I could trust this to be answered too. And it didn't, yes, it would have been great if it had been healed in 1 hour or 2 hours or something like that. But it was also in not giving into discouragement. It was just like, no, I'm going to stay in this. And it took a while, but again, I was able to do everything I needed to do. And again, I don't know what the diagnosis for how long these things are supposed to go, but I mean, within 2 weeks, it was all gone. And that felt to me like a nice working out.
That's a wonderful story, Mark. I have to ask, bless that poor little camera. How did you wind up doing that part of your reporting work? I would have wondered, gosh, I'm so far away from home and I'm not even able to take any pictures.
Well, that was another example. I had so many of these to lean on when I was dealing with the physical problem of, again, having trust that, okay, the picture might not be what I'm expecting, but this has all worked out. I had, that was my last day. I had taken all my photographs, except for I had one more person to talk to. And the person who I went to talk to was a professional photographer. So he just lent me his camera. So it was like, even in that moment of distress, as you describe it, there was an answer waiting right there. And I think I had gone into this trip trying to let God lead, and having been able to build up that trust, having to be able to build up that confidence, gave me the confidence to not be discouraged when this happened. Felt like I had been using my spiritual muscles all through this trip. Yeah. So that when this happened, I didn't go, oh, what was all that for? I said, okay, I'm ready for this. Let's go.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, because I have had experiences before I think I really got serious about studying Christian Science. I knew that Christian Science was true. I had seen evidence of it, but it always seemed like life just made it life was just too busy to work in, like, say, for instance, studying the Bible lesson or praying daily and that sort of thing. And besides, I sort of felt like I could always turn to Christian Science and what I knew of it, and I would, in some situation of extremity, I could trust it. But I think that as time has gone on, and certainly as I've been doing this thing with Sentinel Watch, getting to talk to people like you and others who really put Christian Science to the test every day, I'm finding more and more how important it is to keep working out, as you were describing it, because there's a sort of an attitude of thinking that is so helpful to have every day as you approach whatever that day seems to bring. That's almost what needs to happen. You talk about letting go. And I wanted to ask you how you do that, how you let go, and what that means to let go. Let go to what? Could you say more about that?
Yes, and I think it's interesting that you raised that, because, I mean, in some sense, perhaps as I was thinking about this, the reason that I wasn't able to progress more quickly was because the temptation is, once it becomes manageable, to manage it. You know, to put it aside. You know, it's like, I can just kind of grit my teeth and get through this task. And there was absolutely some of that in what I went through, because I was in Greenland. And then after that, I was going to the Olympics and I had to come back and I had to write my cover story, which was 3,500 words long. And I needed to, you know, so it's there is that, thank you, God, I'll put you aside now and go do my regular work. And then I'll come back to you when the pain comes back, sort of thing. And I 100% did some of that, no question. But I kind of realized that that was bunk. You know, that wasn't the real way of looking at it, is there's a thread beneath it of what's true. And when I was able to put aside the other things, then it was a different experience. And that's what I mean by letting go, is that whenever you are managing the problem, even if you're doing it, you know, with good motives and things like that, but ultimately, if it's about trying to fix something, if it's about trying to just muscle your way through, to take Christian Science as a quote-unquote pill or procedure so that my body is functioning again so I can go back to my quote-unquote normal life, whenever you're doing that, you're not really doing much. You're not really getting to the nub of the matter. To me, when I feel like I'm making the most progress is when I have done the work on the front end to be able to say and believe it, this material experience does not tell me what is true. If we can really get to the point where we recognize that our reality is actually based in a deeper sense of spirit that underlies creation, drives creation, provides structure for creation, provides the energy, the dynamism, all that is spiritual. When you really feel that, and that to me is communing with God, that is prayer, that is understanding who we are in a spiritual context. When you really get that, then all of a sudden the material picture kind of doesn't matter. And that does happen. I mean, that's to me when the healing comes, is when you're like understanding this realization, this inspiration, whatever you want to call it. But that's what I mean by letting go, is it's all of a sudden the material picture falls away and the spiritual reality becomes much more concrete. That's when the healing happens.
Yeah, you're no longer managing the problem. And what I find is so funny is that sometimes the dawning of that realization that I'm not managing this problem anymore, it just doesn't matter. I almost laugh out loud. A smile comes to my face.
Yes.
And I feel a lightness of being almost.
Absolutely.
And I know that in that moment, healing is happening, that it is taking place. You said something interesting, and for the sake especially of our listeners who may not be that familiar with Christian Science, you said, when I have done the work on the front end. And I'm wondering if you can describe what that entails. What does it mean to do the work on the front end so that you're able to deal with the day in a more effective and spiritually focused way?
I think there's no formulaic way of answering it. There's no, do this sort of thing. What it is Paul, who wrote so many of the books in the New Testament when he was talking about this kind of work, he described it like putting on armor, the breastplate of righteousness, the helmet of salvation, I think. But the idea is every day you're going to wake up and you're going to wade out into a world that is going to try and convince you with everything it has that everything is material, that your life is material, your relationships are material, your job is material, everything, that the world is essentially run by coincidences and things that we cannot control. That's the nature of the physical world. You're on a roller coaster and it's going to take you where it takes you, and there's really not much you can do about it because we live in a world of randomness. What Paul, to me, was saying was that we need to go into every day ready to refute that. And I think that's going to be different for everyone, but ultimately, I think the common thread that everyone will share is setting a deep foundation on spiritual reality and spiritual inspiration for our day. Jesus Christ talked of the rock, and my sense is that's very much what we're talking about here, is how can I ground myself? He talked about in the Sermon on the Mount about how do you build a house? Do you build it on the sand or do you build it on the rock? And this is exactly, I think, his point, is that when you build it on the sand, when you haven't done the work, put in the work ahead of time, to use my language, you're building on the sand so that when something bad happened, when the tree falls on the house, when you slip on the ice and fall on your camera, then you're on the sand and you're just going to be swept away because you've got no spiritual foundation to hold on to. But I think when you're talking about building on the rock, you've done that work ahead of time so that when the wind comes, the rain comes, all of those things, they can't move you because you are founded on a different picture of reality. And I think that takes hourly, certainly daily work to kind of go out into the world, but also not be of the world. We're not ascetics. We don't just go kind of sit in our chairs at home and think beautiful thoughts. We go out into the world, but we recognize its true substance. And that's work, but it's good work. And I think what we've been talking about, David, is that when we're managing things, we're not doing much. When we're actually doing that, that's when we're actually getting a foothold.
Yeah, I know that sometimes when I find myself feeling somehow distant from that tender, loving care that I feel when I am in tune, in a sense, mm-hmm. when I'm aware of God's spiritual presence. Not that it comes and goes, but it's my awareness of it. That sometimes all it takes is that pause and that giving of my attention to the idea that what I'm seeing, what I'm feeling, where I think I'm sitting at the moment or whatever, that this is not what's true. And it's that willingness to let go that sometimes opens the way to greater preparation for the day. It's almost as if what you're doing is first letting go and then letting that flood of inspiration come in to fill that vacuum, in a sense. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. One of the things that came to me as I was working on this problem, it came to me that it's not enough to speak the truth. You have to sing the truth.
Hmm.
And what I mean by that is I'm a big fan of the book of Revelation and have just done a lot of work thinking about it. And there are seven visions that happen in Revelation. And the first one is like our introduction to the world of spirit. It's that first burst of inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, I found it the most boring of the chapters because basically everything that happens is that the angels are singing and the beasts are singing and the people are singing. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so boring. And then all of a sudden I stopped and I went, well, but this is what God's universe looks like. And I loved it at that moment. It was, they are singing.
Mm-hmm.
They are so joyful. And then I realized that, you know, my tendency in managing the problem does tend to be, I turn to intellectualism, shockingly enough, you would have never guessed. But, you know, I tend to turn the problem into an intellectual problem and then try and solve it. And it's just, there's nothing wrong with that. It's helpful. It can move you forward. But in the end, it's not enough. You've got to sing. And to me, that's that letting go part, is when you're singing, you're just letting go and you're just letting joy ring through every fiber of your being. To me, that was a really interesting point, is that when we are in God's kingdom, we are singing, and there's kind of no other way to be there. And so that's a good way of kind of knowing where you are along the journey, is mm-hmm. like, you're not really praying to get rid of this or that. You're praying to be able to sing joyfully. And when you can do that, then the problem's gone.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not there. There's just nothing of it left.
You know, what I hear you describing, though, I think could be misinterpreted or misconstrued, and I want to make sure that there's not a misunderstanding here. Mm. It's not that we're talking about two different realms of truth, that there's not a material truth and a spiritual truth. Ultimately, truth is, and so it comes down to, in the world of, I mentioned in the world of physics, for example, there seem to be these competing theories about what is true. And it seems as if, you know, they coexist somehow. But when we're talking about spiritual truth, we're really only talking about one truth, aren't we?
Yes. I don't think any of what we're talking about would work if we were talking about two different realities. We are spiritual. We have no material element to us because what we are in our identity is a reflection of God. And so that is part of what we're about proving, that our real identity and who we are is 100% spiritual. And there's a chapter in Science and Health. It's called Fruitage. And I like to listen to it. I have Science and Health on audio version of it. I was going to say on tape, but that tells you, hey, I'm Gen X.
Yeah.
Who has tapes anymore?
Right.
I have an audio version of it. Yes. And an MP3. There you go. And I like to listen to it every once in a while. And what I'm always struck by is that these people are cured of things that were debilitating. And yet the vast majority of them come out of the experience saying that, you know, some version of the healing was wonderful. But much more important was the opening of my eyes to my relationship as God's child. And I think there's something in that that kind of is non-negotiable, in the sense that the tendency, I think, is to kind of misunderstand what Christian Science is here to do and to think of it purely as a sense of healthcare. I mean, I think we go back to the sense of managing things, mm-hmm. which is Christian Science will make me healthy so I can get on with my life. Christian Science is about revealing to the world the present reality of spirit and the present power, omnipresence, omnipotence of God. And healing comes with that, but it's a quite different thing than just healing. If it's just about trying to feel better, that's not really what Christian Science is for. Christian Science is to reveal that we are spiritually perfect now, and that we can aspire to a deeper and profound understanding of our identity that will completely reshape our worlds. Mm. And obviously, everyone's at a different stage. You know, it takes step by step by step by step. But on some level, those healings that you read in Fruitage just remind us of what we're really doing this for. And we're doing it so that God can be known on earth. As in heaven, so on earth. It's about revealing God's salvation, God's presence, God's love, God's law to earth. And I think it can be easier to be duped into not doing that and to kind of lower our standards for Christian Science. But I think if that's what we're about doing, then there's kind of nowhere else to turn, because nowhere else is going to do that. Nowhere else is going to promise that scientific healing as a part of our onward spiritual journey toward demonstrating God's presence and power now here on earth.
Well, and in fact, you can't be doing this for God and hold to an idea of yourself as a material being. And that mm-hmm. seems to me that's where the change takes place. It's that awakening to the truth of your spiritual being. It's almost as if you are now discovering your true identity in a sense.
Absolutely.
And there's no place for matter in that definition in a way.
Yes. That change in your own understanding of your individuality is going to rock your world. It's going to upset the apple cart of your life a lot, in the sense of all the things that you thought you were, actually you're way more than that. But it's a healthful, it's an invigorating change. But we have to consent to it. We have to consent to the fact that we aren't who we think we are. Hmm. And that's part of the healing, is just to wholly surrender to God's view of us. We are greater, we are larger, we are more beautiful, healthier than we could possibly imagine, because we are God's reflection. And we just have to consent to allow that incredibly powerful influence to reshape us.
Mark Sappenfield is European correspondent based in Berlin for the Christian Science Monitor. Mark, thanks so much for talking with us today on Sentinel Watch. It's been great catching up.
Yes, thank you.
Sentinel Watch is a production of the Christian Science Sentinel. I'm David Brown. Our podcast is produced by Carlos Machado, Sophie Ungerleiter, and our executive producer, Amy Richmond. Our production assistant is Natasha Telshow. Our editor is Lisa Rennie Seitzma. Our audio engineers are Tim Malone, Noel Flatt, Alyssa Britton, and Ian Case. Our theme music is by Jonah Bobo. We'll talk again soon.
This podcast is produced and copyrighted by the Christian Science Publishing Society.